Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your hosts, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, and Dr. Katie Eastman. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth and Katie.
From rainy places today, right, Katie?
Oh, rainy and cold, yes.
Yeah, it is calm. I wouldn't give it the cold factor. I'd give it the melting factor here in Maine, which is it's supposed to rain all tonight and tomorrow, which means hopefully the 5 feet of snow that we have will start melting, I'm thinking, maybe.
So it's that time of year.
Yeah, you must be warmer than that. You're not sitting in 5 feet of snow there.
No, but I'm on the water, so there's a chill.
Okay. There's a chill, it's, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you know. All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the Best Ever You Show. We're so honored to be with you today, and we're so thankful again to Blog Talk Radio for featuring our show again. We're under the staff picks, and we love Blog Talk Radio and everyone there. And feel free to tweet us at Best Ever You or Dr. Cade E. I like that. You spell that Drkatie with another E on that. So Dr. Katie. And then also you can tweet us at Joan Wages or NWHM or also Women's History. So lots of tweets going around today if you want to tweet us. I'm going to open a chat room here shortly for the show. But let's give a shout out to our sponsor. Our show is always sponsored by Delamore. Delamore there in Vermont. You can visit their website, delamore.com. And they are great pasta sauce. I'd say best pasta sauce, really. They're really...
Oh, they are so good. Yes, yes, they are so good. And they're natural ingredients. You can just taste how well made that pasta sauce is. And and everybody in our family loves it. It's great.
You know, in their, I do some social media posting for them every once in a while. And in their Facebook, I just posted a picture of a baby. And you know how hard it is to get kids to eat red sauce on anything. And this baby is literally like covered in it, hands, mouth, everything. So, and I'm kind of the same way. I keep telling Frank, I'm like, Frank, I think you've really got something here. You're actually getting kids to eat red sauce from your daughter to my four boys to even, you know, the baby. You know, I just think that's hysterical. So they've clearly broken new ground.
They have. I have never, my daughter will not eat tomato anything except their sauce.
And most kids won't. Yeah, that's the way my whole house is either, too. Two of them will eat stuff with red sauce and two of them won't, and now all four of them do. So that's been a pretty cool experience. So anyway, Delamore.com, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, and you can order pasta sauce right online. And they also added a new section to their website where you can, it's a store locator, where you can go in and type in your state and find out where the pasta sauce is carried at the grocery store nearest you. And I think they're in like 40 states now. So they're a growing company, and the owner's fabulous, and we're going to do a radio show with him at some point, too. And then the other bit of business we have is Percolate. Katie and I are so proud to announce that we have a book coming out with Hay House. So hayhouse.com, it's called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. And that's in editing right now. We're proud to say they're editing us. And that is going to come out August 20th, 2013. So really excited about that. And you can go on to Amazon.com, and the book's actually in pre-order mode. And Katie, over the past 2 days, we've jumped from number 3 million something in sales to in the 100,000. So people are pre-ordering it, and it's kind of exciting to see, maybe where we'll land up in even just in pre-order mode. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly exciting, and we had so much fun writing this book and put so much into it, and to have people embrace it is just weak. It's just hard to even put into words.
It is.
We're really grateful.
It's taken this long to really understand that it's real, too. You know, like, this is really happening. We have a book coming out. You're kind of one of those things, you got to blink a little bit and go, yeah, this is real. You wake up,
yep.
And, yep. So pretty exciting things, and we thank everybody at Hay House for all of their love and support. And welcoming us into their family. They're just a great group of people. So, on with the show. Then we are going to bring on Joan Wages. Let me get to my notes here because I want to make sure I properly introduce Joan Bradley Wages. This is cool. She is the president and CEO of the National Women's History Museum. You can visit their website at nwhn.com. And Joan, how are you today?
.org.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I've got on my notes, I have .com, .org, .org. NWHM.org. Sorry about that. How are you today, Joan?
I'm good.
Good catch.
I'm good.
You're editing
for having
me. Welcome to the editing crew for Katie and Elizabeth.
Actually, if you type in .com, you'd probably find us, but .org gets you directly there.
Directly there. Yeah, good point. So tell us about the National Women's History Museum. This is so cool.
Well, if we stop and think about it, we realize that women's history is missing when people talk about our nation's history. So even today, only 1 in 10 figures in the textbooks, in the history textbooks, is about a female. And in our national parks, less than 8% of the statues are about our women leaders. So, you know, when you're taking the family vacation, you're not seeing that there were women leaders. You're seeing all the men on the horse. And then if you go to our nation's capital building, there are only 13 statues of women out of the 214 statues. So we have a long way to go in order to ensure that women's history is made a part of our nation's history.
I can hear you, yeah.
I know. When you hear those statistics, and I have a daughter, and it's just so important for them to feel like they're equal and to be seen.
Right.
And so
exactly.
how did this start?
Well, the woman who came up with the idea, Karen Staser, had a passion for women's history. She and her husband had moved here from Alaska, here being Washington, D.C., and she was on the National Mall and thought to herself, where would I like to go more than any place? Because, you know, when you go to the National Mall, you can't go to every museum. There are too many. And so she thought, well, where's the Women's History Museum? And she thought for sure one was in the works, was being planned or, you know, close to being built. And then she learned that there was not even one on the drawing board. So she started bringing people together, and it's just been growing ever since.
And it was founded in 1996, and it says here the museum is a nonpartisan, nonprofit educational institution dedicated to preserving, interpreting, and celebrating the diverse historic contributions of women and integrating this rich heritage fully into our nation's history. That is profound, and that's a big, tall order right there.
It is. It's a very big order and desperately needed. I'll just go back to the point about the daughters. It's amazing how early young girls realize that women are missing. And the studies show that by 6 or 7 years old, they have already realized this. So we have, talk about tall orders, we've got to get to these young girls early.
Oh, yeah.
That's so true. I mean, we were actually watching. There was a 60 Minutes, the woman from Facebook, and forgive me,
oh,
your name.
Yeah. Sheryl Sandberg.
Lean In, right, Lean In.
Yep.
And we were watching that, and we brought our daughter in. She's 10, and we asked her to watch it with us, and she had the most remarkable response to that. She goes, "Wow, I'd really like to learn more about women like that."
Mm.
And it was like, oh, my goodness, we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
We do, because you're right. They're role models. We just have, there are so many wonderful women for them to learn about. Can you share with us a little more about the, I guess there was a statue moving situation in the, can you tell us that story?
Sure. Well, there's a statue, a 7-ton white marble statue of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, and Lucretia Mott that stands in the Capitol building. And it had been a gift to the Capitol, to the U.S. government, in 1921, so a year after women got the vote, because these are the three founders of the women's campaign for the vote. So the statue was dedicated in the Capitol Rotunda in 1921, and the very next day, the all-male Congress had the statue moved downstairs to what at that time was essentially a service closet that had brooms and mops, and so the statue was put in there, and that area was eventually open to the public, and it's called the Crypt, the Land of the Dead. And that's where the statue stayed for 76 years.
Oh, wow.
So there was a big campaign in 1995, which was the 75th anniversary of women getting the vote. And a number of women's groups had gone to Congress and asked them to please move that statue back into the rotunda so our foremothers could be standing alongside our nation's forefathers, you know, the George Washingtons and Abraham Lincolns. And so the Congress refused to move the statue for that 1995 celebration. And about that time, the museum was being formed, and we said, this is what happens to women's history, is that it comes to the light of day, and then it is stored away in the library or the archives or the crypt, and it doesn't remain part of our national story. So mm-hmm. the museum decided that this was the perfect metaphor for why we need a National Women's History Museum, so we took on the project. A couple of us, I became involved around the move of that statue, and I had been lobbying on Capitol Hill for a number of years, and so I joined with others who had lobbying experience, and so we started lobbying Congress to move the statue. And there were many, many excuses why Congress said they could not move it. But one of our favorites was one of the members of Congress said they didn't agree to move the statue because the women were ugly.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
And to that, Congresswoman Pat Schroeder, who was in Congress at that time, said, "Have you looked at Abraham Lincoln lately?"
I was waiting for something like that.
we could do
it. He was kind, huh?
Yeah. And, I mean, even by 1995, you would have thought no member of Congress would have dared use that excuse. But
yeah.
So we continued to lobby, and then Congress said that they didn't have the money, they didn't have the funds to move this 7 tons of marble upstairs into the rotunda. So we said, fine, we'll pay. And so we went out and we raised $86,000 needed to for the construction firm to move the statue upstairs. And once we went back with the check in hand, then they were pretty obligated to move the statue. So the statue ended up being moved into the rotunda on Mother's Day of 1997. where it still stands, by the way.
What would happen if every or most women just even donated a dollar to you?
Well, we'd have our museum built quite rapidly.
Yeah.
I mean,
we need help, Katie.
Yeah, that's what you should challenge everybody listening. Send in a dollar.
Send in a dollar.
Yeah, right. Right.
Is there a way to do that? Can you just, is there an address? People could just mail a dollar?
Yes. Well, people can go to our website and they can donate any level that they choose. So our website is nwhm.org. And there's a donate button right there on the homepage, and we would be delighted.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to exclude men there either. You know, if you're listening and you're a guy, you know, and you want to donate, please.
Absolutely.
And then we'll get the museum built. How much money do you need?
Well, if we start from just a vacant lot, it will probably cost us around $400 million. Which sounds astronomical, but that's actually the going rate for building a museum here in Washington. So it's I figured the other day the Holocaust Museum that's here in Washington, it was built about 30 years ago, and it would cost about $750 million in today's dollars if it were built today.
Wow, that was built 30 years ago already, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's sure. Definitely. Okay, so $400 million, folks. Everybody listening, we need a rally.
Yeah.
A $400 million rally. Let's go. And you can visit nwhm.org look at, you know, the donation information there. What a wonderful thing this would be. To see built. You know, I have a question for you, a business question for you, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
You have such a pleasant voice, and you can hear you're just a pleasant person to be around. Do you have a different voice that kicks into gear to get things done?
I think my staff would say yes. You know, we really are working as a team on the staff, and we have a lot of fun together.
Yeah.
But, of course, there are times that it has to get very serious, and we have to communicate that we're serious about the project. You know, that this isn't just fun and games. We're very serious about and you know, the seriousness comes in when you start contemplating how much it will change women's lives. And I have described this as that women now stand on historical quicksand because we don't know our history. One of our scholars said a number of years ago that women essentially have to recreate the wheel every generation because we don't know what our foremothers did. So unlike men's history, you know, where they know about the men who came before them and built this country and fought in the wars and all of these wonderful and brave things. So it inspires them. It gives them determination. It gives them ideas as to how they can live a better life. Mm-hmm. We don't have that background. So what we may know something from our family history, but there's so much more that we could know about women and be inspired by what women have done.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing pockets of people appearing on TV or running for office, or, you know, there are some great strides being made,
mm-hmm.
And progress being made. Do you think there'll ever come a point where women don't rip on other women despite what political role they're in or what party they're in or what they're doing? Are we ever going to get to that point where we rally behind each other just simply as women? You know, for example,
you know,
I'm thinking of Cheryl yesterday coming out with her book, and people aren't happy. It's like, oh, my goodness gracious, you know, she's the billionaire, yeah, or whatever. Think of all the things she's gone through to get to where she is, or think of Hillary Clinton and all the things she's gone through. Think of Sarah Palin and all the things she's gone through. Think,
yeah,
of, you know, all, it doesn't, does it really matter what political party they're in or what they're, does it? That's a question for,
well,
you. I have no idea. I'm
I don't
asking.
I don't know the answer to that question. If we'll ever get to that point, we certainly are. I can attest to we're not at that point now. But you know, you look at men. All men are not alike. All men don't agree, and so I'm not so sure that it's realistic that all women will ever agree on.
Good answer.
On a particular subject. Well, I mean, you know, you just look at what are the possibilities here, and you know, I happen to be working here in Washington, where I see the political issues, both sides of the issues, and I think the best that we can do is to find a middle road where we don't particularly focus on what we don't disagree on, but rather what we agree on. And I think that that's how women have gone into countries that have civil wars and, you know, civil strife. And that's the way that they start bringing communities together, is to focus on what we do have in common.
Yes, and you know, one thing too that comes to mind when you're talking about that, I really love, is the fact that what you're doing sheds light on how hard it was for women to even get to vote.
Yes.
I mean, our,
yes,
girls don't know that. They don't understand,
right,
what the suffragette movement was or what they went through.
That's,
can,
right,
can you tell us some of those stories? Because I worked at the Anna Howard Shaw Center in Boston, and
I just
love that woman, and she was one,
yeah,
of the suffragettes. And so, share some of the great stories.
Well, oh dear, there's so many of them that, I mean, when you think about that, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony launched the campaign in 1848 by the having a convention in Seneca Falls, New York, and where they declared that women should have the vote. And that was such a novel concept. And then that Susan B. Anthony began traveling the country campaigning for the vote, where she would be pillared with tomatoes and rotten eggs and things like that, because she had the audacity to stand up and declare that women should have the vote. Just in Anthony's lifetime, women moved so much closer to getting the vote, but she didn't live to see it, and neither did Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So then there was the second wave of suffragists who came forward, the Alice Pauls and the Carrie Chapman Catts, who took up the banner and continued to move forward. Carrie Chapman Catt ran the side of the campaign where there was an effort to get women the vote in each state. And by, I think it was the early 1900s, we had about 7 states that had given women the vote, or I shouldn't even say given women. Women had gotten the vote because they fought for it. And textbooks today often say that women were, quote-unquote, given the vote in 1920. Well, women were not given anything. We had fought for it for 72 years. So, but then Alice Paul came to Washington and led a more militant, just kind of unbelievable campaign. She was the first to picket the White House. So she and other suffragists would stand out front of the White House. So one of the famous signs was, "Mr. President, how long must we wait for liberty?" And then Woodrow Wilson, who was president at that time, and others decided that this wasn't great publicity. So they had the women arrested and taken and into jail. And it was during that time that Alice Paul went on a hunger strike and refused to eat, so they would force feed her. But then that got out into the public, and the public was just outraged by that. And so bit by bit, the whole public attitude about women getting the vote changed, but it took 72 years.
What do you think is going to happen over the next 72 years?
Oh, wow. Wow. You know, I do think that we see things changing as far as, you know, women are now getting the most in bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs, veterinary, medical doctor, lawyer. So women are getting very educated, and things are going to change as a result of that. And if you've possibly read The Richer Sex by Liza Monday, that is about these changes that are happening because women are getting better educated, they're getting better jobs, and how their lives are changing as a result. So I think you know, education is the way out, is the way to turn things around.
Who do you think? Who will be? Well, I don't know if I'm going to ask this right, but we'll fiddle with the question. Katie, feel free to chime in, or Joan even chime in. Who will be featured in the museum? Are there current people? You know, are there people that are relevant right now, or that will be part of that, or is there a time frame that, in which people are featured, or do you know what I mean? Go ahead, take it.
Well,
I'm thinking Oprah or something like that. You know, does Oprah go in there? You know, or is it past? You know, is it past?
Yeah. Well, it will focus primarily on American women's history, and it will focus a lot on the women of the past. But one of the things, we have an annual gala each year, and between now and the time we're building this museum, and one of the things we do is we take a woman from today and we pair her with a woman from the past to show that we are standing on the shoulders of the women who came before us. So, like last year, we honored Annie Leibovitz, you know, famous photographer, and we paired her with Dorothea Lange, who you may not know her name, but you would recognize her photographs that she took during the years of the Great Depression.
I know who that is. I studied her. That's funny.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so we pick three women from today and pair them with three women from the past. And so that's one way to send that message that we are connected to the women who came before us.
That's so cool. Are they they're going to, do you think it'll be strange to know that there's going to be a statue of you there? Didn't even know you hired to make a statue, Joan. I think that's cool. Here's the founder.
Oh, what a riot. That's very funny. I've never actually even thought about that.
Well, you better start thinking about it. I know. I can tell by your voice and personality that you haven't thought about it, but you need to. We need to get somebody on that, because that's going to be a part of it.
I'll tell you, that's the least of my concerns. I don't want to get no museum built.
She's so humble. You are just isn't she just you're just a sweetheart.
Incredibly inspiring, too, because of I know what it takes to get something to happen like that.
Yeah.
And I would like to know a lot more. Joan, how did you get here?
Yeah. we really want to know.
Yeah.
There are so many young – well, we have this other site before you go and tell us.
Yeah.
We have this other site also. It's called Best Ever Teens. And so we have Best Ever You and Best Ever Teens, and we have all of these young women and some men, but mostly young women, really following, and they listen to our shows, and they really listen. How are you doing that? How did you get there? What did you do? What courses did you take? And so this is really important, because I know there are a lot of people listening.
Curious. I don't know how far back to go, but I was already working in Washington, and I was lobbying on women's issues and issues about women in the workplace and some things like that. And when I heard about this effort to move this statue, I was outraged that Congress would not move the statue of these women. And I didn't know who the women were, which is just typical, because nobody knows women's history. But the more I learned about who the women were, and so I tracked down the small group that had already formed to start working on getting that statue moved. And I thought, you know, I am willing to donate my time as a lobbyist, to work on this, because I want a statue of women to be standing permanently in our U.S. Capitol Rotunda. And I think that that's there are a couple of messages I would send to younger people about that. And first is that to act on something that you're inspired by. You know, I didn't have any idea that I would still be working on this project 15 years later. And in fact, the woman who had the original idea said in one of our meetings, well, our next project after we move the statue will be for a National Women's History Museum. And I said to myself, that's great, and I'm not going to be around for that. I'm moving on.
So that's 15 years.
Right. But you don't always know what's going to inspire you. But if you're inspired in the moment and you think that something really needs to change, then you need to take some action to make that happen. And even a small action, donating a little bit of time to something, you can meet people, you can, I'm just glancing across my office where I have a picture of a number of the women senators that was taken at an event we did. Senator Susan Collins from Maine.
We love her.
Tells the story of when she was interning for a project, and she got to meet Margaret Chase Smith, who at that time was the senator from Maine. And, of course, that changed her entire life. That inspired her to eventually become a senator. So, you know, you never know what doors are going to open, but you have to take that first step.
I love this right here. Katie, we're taking this for a second here, because this is so Best Ever You, and it's our leap of faith, and it's our trust your gut, and find what's inspiring to you, and all those things. I could not agree with you more.
Exactly, and not being afraid. My mentor was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
There you go.
My mentor is Katie.
And I would never have ever imagined in a year that I could ever meet her, and not to mention her being a mentor and a friend.
Yeah.
And it just, life gives you these great opportunities where you get a choice. And like you're saying, it's so important to just speak up.
That way on the radio right now. I'm like giddy that you're on the radio with us. I think it's so neat. You know, it's just a moment. And thank you, Brianna Brown, for making this possible.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah, thanks to Brianna.
Yeah, we love her, and we thank her for all she's done for Best Ever You over the years. She's just been such an inspiring person and just has put so many opportunities in, you know, for us. It's hard to even talk about all of them. So she's just an inspiration and lovely too. So
right, and there's someone who really helps women all the time.
All the time. Yep. She's just always there. I want to back up a little bit and just ask you. We sometimes ask this of people who are on the show. What were you like in kindergarten?
I never went to kindergarten.
Oh, you didn't?
We didn't have kindergarten where I lived at the time.
Okay, but grade school. I'm trying to understand. Did you always know that you were going to have a somewhat of a political career? Were you that student council senator? You know, how were you in school?
Oh, let's see. By high school, I did serve as in the student council. So there was a bit of a leaning there. I've sometimes looked back and thought, you know, what were the early indicators?
Yeah.
And I don't see many. I mean, the only consistent one I would see is that my father used to call me hard-headed. So I see that. That definitely has stayed with me. You know, when even as I graduated from college, I majored in mathematics, and when I didn't know what a lobbyist did at that point. So, you know, there were just a lot of things that just didn't, the pieces just had to come together as I grew older. But I was always curious. I was always looking for something else, and in looking back, that something else was this museum, because it's become my my passion, my life, my 24/7.
Katie, did
so
you
your
want to
fortitude,
that?
Your fortitude that your dad saw in you as a girl, how has that helped you?
Well, you can't take on a project of any duration without that. You've got to have the ability to, I guess, trust yourself. That you know that you can do the work, that you can we often say around here, you know, it doesn't take Einstein to do some of these things. We may not know how to do it right at the beginning, but we can figure this out. And I think that maybe women are not quite as willing to jump on that in that direction as men are sometimes, but you know it's that being willing to stick to it and with it so that it just to see where it's going to take me, you know. Next.
Has anybody ever said to you, you know, let's not do this. This is, you know, how many people along the way have said, you know, this is just not a good idea, or we're not going to support this, or have you encountered any type of?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm
oh,
sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There's been volumes.
In fact, just last night there was a woman I met who was very negative, and but you know there are people like that about everything. So, you know, I look at what our women politicians go through.
Yeah.
You know, you...
I was kind of alluding to it earlier. You know, it's just, like, amazing what people go through.
Exactly. And you just have to know within yourself that you're doing the right thing, and you're doing what, you know, my philosophy is that the world kind of has a way of communicating to you when you're on the right track and when you're not on the right track. And if you're not on the right track, then things aren't working for you. You know, I mean, like in this particular case, we wouldn't be able to raise money, or we wouldn't be able to find scholars who would work with us, and we wouldn't be able to. But the fact is that we are raising money. We have Meryl Streep, who's pledged $1 million. We have
Meryl Streep.
Woo!
Yay! I love her. She's beautiful. She is so cool. I still get chills sometimes when I see how just totally real she is. Like, she was accepting an Academy Award and forgot her glasses.
Yeah,
you know,
so,
that kind of,
wasn't
she's
that
so
fun?
Cool. Yes, yeah. It was fun. It was like, you know, finally, there's not all that, that, you know, it's just like you can just be, she's setting the tone for people to just be able to be real.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And not be all like, you know, especially as we age and stuff, there's so much pressure on us.
Yeah.
And I loved it when she did that. That is, that moment will stick in my mind forever. Because it just said, you know, we don't have to be all fake.
Yeah,
I forgot my glasses and
that,
I can't
that's
see.
That's right. That we can be real, and we too can go, oh wow, I forgot my glasses, or you know, without feeling like an absolute idiot.
Yeah, no.
Right.
That we can be human, and you know,
for some reason that was just a profound moment for me. I have no idea why. I think about it a lot too. I do, and I don't know why, but I do. Oh, well. Yeah, I just do.
I'm really curious. I love what you're doing with your new PSA. Can you tell us about that? Because with a daughter, I've watched it several times, and I can't wait to show it to her. Tell us where that came from.
Well, we have been bringing women together across the country, establishing regional councils, and we have one in Los Angeles. And so they kept trying to come up with an idea of what they could do to support the museum. And finally, they thought, you know, this particular group had a lot of great connections in the film industry, and so they said, you know, we can bring people together and do this PSA, and you know, a PSA, public service announcement. So the museum had wanted something like that that we could put out and, you know, bring people to learn more about the museum. So Catherine Hardwick, who is a director, she's one of the best known female directors. She had directed Twilight, and she brought in people to work with us. Alfie Woodard, who's an Emmy Award winning actress, agreed to be in the PSA, and then they brought in these young girls who were all actors. And they had a whole day of production, you know, where they put the young girls in costumes, so that one is supposed to be Rosa Parks, and another is Amelia Earhart, another one's Estee Lauder, and another one's Sybil Ludington. And so they are just adorable, saying, don't tell me I can't be Rosa Parks. I took my place on a bus and, you know, launched the entire civil rights movement. So it's to show that these young girls can identify with and come to know who these women from history are, and it's very inspiring.
Oh, I loved it, and it's I can be. I mean, the message is so wonderful.
Yes,
exactly. Don't tell me I can't.
Right. Yeah, I can be. Yeah.
My phrase is always, the more people that tell me I can't, that's another log on my passionate fire.
hashtag can.
Right.
Yes.
Joan, can you tell us about some of the events that you have coming up? Are there, looks like there's parades and events and things like that. Do you?
Well, we just had 6 days of 6 events that the museum did around the first weekend in March, which was to celebrate the centennial of the 1913 suffrage march. And the significance of that march, I had mentioned that suffrage, the fight for suffrage went on for 72 years. But after 65 years, there were only a few states that had given women the vote. And Alice Paul brought the suffragists together, and they planned this march down Pennsylvania Avenue. They had 5,000 women march. Now, think about this. In that time frame where they didn't have email or Twitter or Facebook or faxes or any kind of mass communication, they were able to bring together 5,000 marchers in less than 2 months.
I think we need a Geico commercial. Have you seen that Geico commercial where Paul Revere, they've got a cell phone and it's Paul Revere, and he goes,
no.
Yeah, hello. And he goes, oh, yeah, they are. And he hangs up, and he goes, yeah, the British are coming. And then it says, are you happy? Yeah, I'd be happier than Paul Revere with a cell phone, you know, kind of thing. Imagine. I think the Geico commercials are just priceless with the way they've taken. This would be a neat idea for you to get in touch with Geico, because they're taking history and putting in a little touch of current.
Yes.
And changing it into a Geico commercial. And there's probably something you could do there to team up with them. There's got to be something there, because that commercial, my kids just bust a gut when that commercial comes on. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
But I would too. That's a riot. That's great.
The British are coming. You know, he quickly hangs up. You know, it's just like, oh, funny. Oh, they are? Okay. Anyway,
I was saying it's about the events, and
yes. And
so a week ago Sunday, we joined with thousands of other women in reenacting the march. It was a very cold day here, and the wind was blowing, so it made it even colder. And but we just had a great day of reenacting the march. And then, we had a reception at the National Press Club one night. We had a congressional reception on Capitol Hill. We had a reception at the Finnish Embassy. And the significance of that was that the Finnish women were the first women to get the vote and to be able to stand for office. So the Finnish women have had the right to vote for, I think it's about 13, 14 years longer than we have. And then we had a scholars panel. So we had 5 scholars come in and from across the country who talked about the suffrage movement and what all the different pieces of the suffrage movement were. And, African-American women had an entirely different experience of the suffrage movement from white women, and then, you know, the role that men played. And so it was very, very informative and enlightening. And then on another night, Cokey Roberts, the journalist, who has written a couple of books herself about our founding mothers. Mm-hmm. And so she did a talk with another of our scholars who has just written a book on Dolly Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
Cokey Roberts fascinates me too. I'm absolutely, I've got her studied back and forth. I mean, I think she's a fascinating person.
Yes. Yeah.
She is.
And she's been so generous with her time and her support for us. So we are just so appreciative of, some of these women who have made it into these positions of recognition are so aware of how they have done so as a result of what the women before them have gone up against the challenges and have met the challenges and had the courage to do that. So that they are very appreciative of what we are working to do here.
I want to touch on, we've got a big mommy base. Do you mind if we touch on mommies for a minute?
No, love mommies.
We got to talk to our mommies out there, because sometimes mommies feel like, oh, if I choose to stay at home, you know, I'm going to open this can of worms. So, you know, if I choose to stay at home, it means I'm not working, or I'm not respected, or I'm not making history, or I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. Can you just touch on the importance of moms?
Well, I would just say that I am working on this museum as a result of the love and respect I had for my own mom, who saw that her greatest achievement in life was raising my brother and me. So, you know, making that contribution to our country cannot be underestimated. And, you know, I think far too many times that there's not been the respect and I guess honoring of the role of mother. And I think that that's even reflected in the legislation that was passed that granted time off to working mothers to give birth, mm-hmm. and family and medical leave legislation. But why isn't that paid like it is in other countries?
When I had my first baby, I had to sell all of my Walmart stock to stay at home.
Oh.
to be able to pay for it, right. Yeah,
our country should so value that job that we pay the women to stay home to care for these children. And
I was a lot younger then. I mean, I was in my early 20s
and
so forth. But still, I remember that vividly, going, okay, I've got a new baby and only so much money in the bank. What am I going to do? And I'm like, oh, there goes my stock. I sold my stock to stay at home with Connor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good
for example.
You.
I was adamant that I was going to do it. But I remember that vividly. And I remember thinking, this is great. You're going to grant me all this time off. But by the end of it, boy. There's not going to be any lights on.
right. And I'll tell you, the ambassador to Finland opened the program that evening, telling us about how the Finnish women get so much time. I think it's like a year of paid leave for each child, and I mean, she went on and on, and we were all about to sign up to move to Finland.
I mean, I would have too, having four kids.
Right.
Yeah.
We do have an online exhibit that we did a couple of years ago about the women in the role of mother and the various way that women have chosen to do that role, you know, whether it's as a stay-at-home mom or a working mom or an adoptive mom. Or
Katie,
foster
go.
Mom,
or Katie.
Yeah,
Katie.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah,
I'm an adoptive mom of a Chinese daughter.
Oh, good for you. Good for
Isn't
you.
Cool?
Well, I mean, you know, these are all just very special situations, and women just continue to rise to the challenge of whatever's involved in playing that role, you know, and in the unique way that they've chosen to do it. So I look forward to the day that all women feel good about the choices that they have made. And that's all part and parcel of why we need this Women's History Museum, so that women can go, okay, well, some women chose to do this, but other women chose to do it this other way.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's fine too.
Yeah,
I almost think I'm looking on your website right now. I think you could almost have like a mom's club on here. I do. I bet you could. I bet I bet if like the at-home mom crowd got behind this too, it would be phenomenal. Because there are so many, there are so many at-home moms just yearning for to be part of something.
Right.
Other than, you know, and it, well, PTA is wonderful and all the things you do at school are wonderful, but a lot of times, you know, you look for something in between a full-time job or a part-time job and volunteering at the school all the time when you're in at-home mom mode. Because I sat in that space for a long time, for a period of 10 years, and I would have loved something like this when I had the babies. You know, they were 0, 2, 4, and 6, and I really had quit my job. Had 4 car seats in my car, 3 strollers, a couple baby bags all the time, and this would have been really neat to be involved in. So, At Home Mommies, if you're listening, nwhm.org. This is a cool cause to get behind, and something for us all to be very proud of. Don't you think, Katie?
Oh, absolutely. I want to ask, Joan, as my mommy instinct here, what is my daughter going to see when I bring her to the museum 5 years from now?
Well, she's going to definitely see an exhibit about the fight to get the vote, because I think it's one of the biggest atrocities that here in this fabulous nation's capital with all these wonderful museums, and there's not one exhibit on how women gained the vote. So she'll definitely see that. And then, you know, our scholars haven't yet decided what they think are the key pieces, but they're going to be some turning points in women's history, so that there will be something about the Progressive Era, which was the late 1800s, early 1900s, where women didn't have the vote, but they were lobbying the politicians so that we got pasteurized milk and sanitary water and libraries and public parks and vaccinations and... So it just went on and on about how women came together to improve our society. And so there will be those stories about how women have helped to build this fabulous country we have.
Do you know what I saw? I was getting off of a plane about a month ago, and I nearly passed out. And I fly here and there, but not enough to see a woman pilot.
Uh-huh.
I'm 44.
Really?
I've never yet seen a woman pilot.
Yeah.
And there she was. And I'm like, no way. I really did a no way. I high-fived her. I'm like, you go, girl. Like that. And she knew exactly what I was talking about. It was so awesome. I'm like, you know, and she was totally down to earth and totally cool enough to high-five. But I looked at her and I'm like, oh my gosh, a woman pilot. I mean, I did one of those like genuine, like I've never seen a woman pilot before. And it shows you how much I get out having 4 boys probably. But, you know, how cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
isn't that great fun?
Yeah. We're doing amazing things.
Yeah. I've actually known of flight crews that were all female. The two pilots were female, and all of the flight attendants were female.
That's so cool.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Well, it is, and here, I know, well, here, I'm near a military base, and I've never had that experience before, and I'm meeting women fighter pilots.
Yeah.
And that has been really, I mean, women in military who I've never been around, and wow, they're leaving their families behind, and going and serving, and they're flying jets, and they're flying helicopters, and it's really quite amazing when you talk to them and how inspiring, and to them it's like that's what I do.
That's my job.
That's my
job. That existed too. To everybody listening live, we're gonna cut off here, but we're gonna go maybe 5 minutes longer. So to listen to the very end of the show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/besteveryou. But the audio for everybody listening live right now will cut off. So you need to go back to that link to listen to the end of the show. Sorry, we're running a little bit long on time. But, you know, what do you think some of the things that women will do that we aren't doing over the next maybe like 10 years or 20 years or even 5 years?
Well, I mean, the obvious is have a woman president.
President, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there are areas, there are still these male-dominated bastions. Corporate boardrooms, for example, are still largely made up of men. There are, I mean, of course, most of the Fortune 500 CEOs are mostly men. So I think that kind of domino by domino, we're going to just make our way into all of these areas so that there are more and more women. The interesting ones, I think, are, for example, the law firms that are, the partners are majority male, but so many women go into the field of law and they just don't want to live that life of working all of those extreme hours and, you know, because it precludes having any other life.
Yeah, I'm a corporate dropout. I get it. I think a lot of people do. That seems to be the it could be considered a mommy juggle or just a woman juggle.
Yep.
I don't think it matters, but just those hours and that stress and so forth, those tend to take a different toll on women.
Exactly.
Or men, too. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, but you know, it's we have that society whereby the men are expected to have a woman at home who keeps the household running and takes care of the kids. And, you know, it's less often that the woman has the man at home who's doing those chores.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it happens, but it's less frequent. So,
there's all sorts of households
going
on right now. Yeah, I mean, there are households still where both parents are working, or man and woman are working.
Yep.
There's my household, and Katie's household. You know, we've got mom and dad sharing just about everything, don't we, Katie?
Oh, thank God.
Yes, I mean, my husband is the laundry king.
Oh, yeah, I never would have survived back in the
50s. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I would have either. But
I just don't know how they did it. I just don't have that aptitude. You know, I'm great at certain parts of being a mom and certain parts of a household, but some things I just am not good at, and he's much better at. So,
well, you know, there were a lot of depressed women back then, too.
Exactly.
Well, I was going to chime in with that, but I wasn't sure if I should. I had a comeback for that, but I was like, I better not say that. but anyway.
I said it for you.
Yeah, thank you. And in a much delicate, in a much more delicate manner, too. The comedian in me sometimes comes out, and I have to put a cap on it. What a wonderful pleasure to be able to speak with you today. And I don't want to take up too much of your time here, considering we're over an hour at this point. But what should we close with here? Should we close? You know, feel free, Joan, close us out here. We want to go to the website.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, we urge everyone to go to the website, become a member of the museum, sign up to get emails. You know, we are frequently updating people on activities and new exhibits that we're putting up online. And educators, we invite them to go onto our website where we have our online exhibits because we have lesson plans for teachers. And
wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, and we have over 300 biographies about women in history, so young people can use those. Oh, and I wanted to point out we have a wonderful online exhibit called Young and Brave, and it's about 21, 22 young women under the age of 23 who helped to change history. So when you were talking about the young teens that listen to your program, I mean, you know, young and brave. And we did it. We did this exhibit precisely because we heard of one of our scholars, her granddaughter brought home a list of characters, people, who she could write a book report about. There were about 12 listed, and there were only two women on the list. One of the women was Eleanor Roosevelt. That's a good one. The second woman was Britney Spears.
Oh, my.
Yes, and that's exactly what we did. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
that teachers in school don't know that there are role models for young women. We need to be doing something about that. So that's why
that's
we created
really
Young and Brave.
You know, here in, we have a, I wonder if we have an interesting situation here in Falmouth, Maine schools. It's kind of neat. Our superintendent is female.
Uh-huh.
And a principal of the middle school is female. The principal of the elementary school is female.
Wow.
You know, is that kind of unique, or do you see more and more with the women educators reaching that superintendent level? When I was a kid, I never saw that.
No, that's right. It was only the men who rose to those types of positions. I'm not a good one to ask about that because I don't have children and I don't know what is happening so much in the schools. I just know that the textbooks still don't have women's history.
Well, I'll talk to Barbara Powers about that in Falmouth, Maine here. Maybe we can I'll ask Barbara about that a little bit. She's the superintendent of our schools here, and she's phenomenal. I just think I just look up to her and just completely respect her, you know, running a whole school district
and
grandkids
absolutely.
And everything. It's really cool.
That's a challenge. Yeah,
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, nwhm.org. Please donate. We're on a rally for $400 million in little chunks of whatever you can donate. If you don't have money for this, even if your donation is taking the link and sharing it in your Facebook or giving it a tweet or putting it on Tumblr or putting it on Pinterest, there are so many things that you can do. If you don't have money to donate. So I would just add that. Just getting the word out, and the word finds its way.
It does. It does indeed.
So, all right. Well, thank you, Joan, for being with us. We certainly just appreciate you, and you are very inspiring.
Yeah, and thank you to both of you. It's been just a delight to talk with you.
Thank you. Katie.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Have a
enjoy
great
today.
Day.
Bye.
Right. Bye,
you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.